Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency. Hey, I'm in HR at a mid-sized company, and lately I've been feeling like our onboarding process is all over the place.
People who join that hotel are expected to spend a week in every different department within the hotel to make sure they understand the challenges that are faced by the kitchens, by the people who do the laundry, by management, so that it gives a level of empathy to everybody within the business of what everybody else does.
Any payroll professionals have any experience with paying out wages of a deceased employee to their spouse?
If someone's bank account's frozen and we physically can't pay into it anymore, that money then doesn't just belong to the employer, it still belongs to somebody. So my advice to the employer in that circumstance is you want to ring fence that money.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Let's go.
What are we talking about today?
Reddit. So I've been pestering Dawn for the longest time about, like, look, they're on Reddit. There's loads of, like, good stories similar to what we discuss normally. Mm-hmm. And, like, people asking for advice and from the employer and employee standpoint. Mm-hmm. But it's quite, I appreciate it's a very specific app.
So do you want to explain what Reddit is?
Yeah, it's a forum-based site where, like, people can freely come in, add what they speak about, what they want. Yeah, it's just it's a discussion-based app, really. Mm-hmm. People offer feedback, advice.
Is it monitored other administrators or is it free conversation?
There's mods.
Okay.
But, like, there's mods per subreddit, but the mods are, I don't think they're employed by Reddit. Or they might be, I don't know. But they're very much, the mods are in the...
Okay, what's a subreddit?
I'll describe how it comes reads on the screen. So it'll be like r/human resources.
Right.
The subreddit is human resources.
So sectors. So yes. The reason why I'm asking, I know of Reddit. Mm-hmm. I've never gone and sought out Reddit. I've never put anything on there. If I put something into Google mm-hmm. and I click on it and go, oh, it's a Reddit answer, I go off it. So oh. I don't put any credibility behind any information that I see on it.
Probably rightfully so.
I don't know why, but I just, in my head, I go, oh God, no, it's a Reddit answer. No, I don't want that. I can go and write something better myself. I might as well ask ChatGPT.
It's not verified.
No, exactly. Yeah. So it's not verified information. So if people are going on there for advice, there's always a treat the information with caution.
Yeah, yeah. Pinch of salt type stuff. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
But to that extent as well, you don't know who's who.
Yeah.
Like you.
Oh, so you can be anonymous on it?
You can't put your own name.
Right, okay.
It's like my Reddit name's like Phoenix1123 or something.
You need to just disclose your Reddit name on here.
Something
so
like
all the
that.
Trolls can come for you on there now.
Get me. I choose it to read stuff. Okay. But yeah, it's good stuff. We've got some stuff here to like go through a few examples. Just fucking see how many we get through.
Okay.
It's great. The first one we're going to discuss is short-term disability. Hi there. I've been lurking here for a little while without an account and reading other submissions and decided I wanted to join to ask a question of my own. Employee A, so this is an employer, had a medical emergency and is now currently out of work with no specific determination on when they will return. Their supervisor technically does not work for my company as we are teamed up on a government contract. Their supervisor informed my superior, who does not work in HR, that the employee is currently out for medical reasons. My superior called the employee and asked me to send them information about how to sign up for short-term disability, in brackets STD, which I promptly did and asked the employee to reach out to me directly if they had more questions or needed assistance. I did not hear anything afterwards from the employee on any front. Do you want to just dissect that before we delve into the questions they've asked?
Sure. So the short-term disability stuff, this sounds like an employer where they have additional benefits that they're not mandated to provide by law. So I'm suspecting this is some sort of disability benefit that the employer will pay out either an income guarantee or give some sort of funded support for a period under this STD scheme. So when someone's off with a disability, this is a measure of support or some sort of facilities or financial assistance that this employer is providing. Often these are insured, which is why there'll be forms to fill out. It won't just be a case of do you want it or not. The more common sister to this is when people take ill health retirement from work. and okay. where that is an insured benefit by the company. So if someone has got a long-term disability and they can't undertake their role anymore, the employer can claim on their insurance and say this employee is long-term sick, and they get essentially an early retirement package from the insurance company.
Oh, okay.
There is a lot of forms to go through when you do one of those. And there's a lot of input often required by GPs, specialists, occupational health to say this person is right for long ill health retirement or not. Mm-hmm. So this sounds like one of those, where we've got someone who is, I mean, short-term disability is a bit of a oxymoron. Disability is invariably a long-term. So if someone has got something that's short-term and disabling, I would say, rather than a short-term disability, that's probably more legally accurate. So it's something that is disabling them, but short-term, rather than being a longer-term disability. Maybe. Possibly, yeah. So something that they're expected to recover from. Mm-hmm. And that by filling out these forms and agreeing to go through the process is likely to be some sort of financial benefit or support that they're going to get at the end of it. And the concern, I think, that we've got here from the manager is they're trying to engage with this employee. They're not hearing anything back. And then I suspect that's where we're going to go with the questions.
Yeah, we'll dig into the first one. In your company, do you wait for an employee to reach out to you about things like short-term disability, assuming you offer it? Or do you reach out and make that recommendation, like proactively type thing?
So I'm always much happier when we're proactive. So rather than waiting for people to ask for support, waiting for people to ask for help. Because an employee, one, they might not know what they're entitled to. They might not know what your company benefits are. They might not feel comfortable asking for help. So actually, if we're on the front foot with this sort of thing and we say, look, just so you're aware, this is the support that's available within the business. This is how we can support your welfare while you're off. These are things that you might be entitled to. At least it gives them that knowledge. It's also going to take some of the pressure off someone if they're unable to return to work at the moment and they're feeling insecure about the fact that they're not able to work, that rather than reaching out and being like, well, you've been off for a while, we might have to start capability proceedings, that we're reaching out and going, how can we help you? That's going to make someone feel much more secure in that role and that they're feeling looked after by their employer. So to answer the question, I would be proactive about it.
So where does this money come from? Is it like a grant thing?
Not necessarily. Some employers will pay for
these
things.
Own pocket.
So it either might be an insured benefit.
Okay.
It could be an external provider, or the employer could just be funding this themselves.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's larger companies, often the benefits are better in terms of things that are funded for employees part of the perks and the packages because, someone's earning the big bucks higher up to be able to fund this stuff.
Mm, absolutely. How often, if at all, do you follow up about their plan of action surrounding short-term disability?
So if someone hasn't come back on this, there could be one of multiple of reasons. One, they haven't actually got the message. So are you emailing them to their company account that they're not accessing because they're off sick? Could your email, particularly if you're emailing from a company email address to a personal one, has it landed in their junk mail? So sometimes it's worth following up either with a phone call or perhaps reaching out on a WhatsApp to say, look, I've sent you something about some company benefits that you might be entitled to, rather than just on a WhatsApp, I've sent you an email, can you check your junk? Which is probably going to make someone go, oh my God,
what's... Am I getting sacked?
Yeah. Tell them, you know, because I'm not advocating WhatsApp, but if you haven't heard back from someone and you've emailed them, I'd say a reasonable means of following up to say, look, I've sent you an email. It's about some company benefits you might be entitled to, might be worth checking your junk. Mm-hmm. It could be that actually they're not feeling well enough. So they've seen that they've had an email, they haven't opened it. The idea of opening something from work's making them feel very anxious, or actually perhaps they don't even understand what it is that you've offered. So if you've sent something that's full of technical, you know, language where we're talking about a short-term disability insured provision, well, I'm not entirely sure. I had to have a look to see that, you know, was this what I think it is?
These things are often like caked in legalese as well.
Exactly. So make it clear what it is that we're offering so that we're making it easy for somebody to engage with it. And I would say also when it comes to things like disability benefits or financial support, and it's part of the reason why I mentioned the ill health retirement, is that is actually the benefit that people are more aware of. So is this an employee who thinks that they're being ill health retired out and they're not ready to leave their job? So again, explaining what these things are, what it means, what this support actually is in very, very simple terms, and actually how they apply for it. If it's, here's 14 forms, do I fill them all out? Do I have to write them up and send them in the post? Have you sent me that's my bugbear, a PDF that you can't fill in.
Oh, mate.
That you've got to download and print off and write in it and scan it back in. if you're sending documents that you want completed and you want them back electronically, send them an editable PDF for goodness sake. It gets under my skin.
If you do run into that again, let me know because I found a good converter for PDFs.
But Joe Public doesn't always know.
Oh, you're right.
Do
yeah.
they? They not don't techie. Always know. So no. If they open one and they're clicking and they can't write in the box, do they know that you can edit the PDF and grab the text editor and drop a box in and type over the top of it? And then sometimes when you fill them in, this is the other bugbear when you've got a link to one. When you fill it in and then it doesn't save.
Oh, heck.
And you filled the form in and it's like, this form only works when it's live on our website. And if you try and download it, it downloads the empty form. That's a thing, and it does my head. Anyway, make it easy for them.
That's the point.
Either fill it in with a pen or give them something that can be filled in electronically and sent back.
Absolutely.
And actually, if you say, look, appreciate the paperwork, it can be a bit overwhelming. If you'd like to call us, we can fill it in with you over the phone. We can complete the documents and send you something to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Much easier than having to face potentially 20, 30 pages of something where you're not sure what you're filling in or signing.
That's a long job.
So let's make it easy. Let's make it accessible because not everybody wants to fill in a form that you get via email. My husband will not do it. If someone sends him an electronic form and it's more than a couple of pages, he'll ring me and be like, can you just do it? Hasn't got the patience. He spends his working life with his phone, not with a laptop or a tablet. He's not going to sit with a little phone screen.
First time I met the geezer, what did he say to me? He had a few hours of leisure and he was like, do you know anywhere that does Laser Quest?
No, it was...
Paintball?
No.
Was
he,
it?
He wanted to go go-karting.
That were it,
go-karting. And then he asked you all if you wanted to go. And I was like, no, they're working. You can't just take my staff and go go-karting with them for the day. That's not how this works.
Oh, bless him.
And he's like, but you're the boss. I'm like, yes. And the boss is saying everyone's got to work today. They can't go go-karting with you.
He means well. Yeah. He meant well.
But if he's on a piece of heavy plant machinery, he is not going to be sat on his phone that's dusty and, you know, there's the various environments going on around him. Go, okay, I'll sit here and fill out an insurance form that's 47 pages long. He's not going to do it.
Absolutely not.
So let's make this stuff accessible. Make it show that it's easy. Where someone is off with something, particularly if it's disability related, let's make it accessible.
Absolutely. Third question, how much time do we allow for an employee to complete this process?
It's kind of see above, like I've just said on that one. If we've overcomplicated something and we've sent them 100 pages to fill out, let's give them a few days.
Is it ad hoc?
Yeah, if it's something that's time sensitive, so say, for example, it's an insured benefit, and from when you inform the insurers that something is going on, there is a window to get stuff back that they have set, we're probably going to keep pace with that employee and say, look, we really need this back so we can process it, otherwise you are going to lose this benefit. We've got a reason to kind of chase up after that. But if we've made it accessible, we've explained what stuff is, we've set out a timescale, maybe we've chased them, made sure that they've actually had the stuff and they don't get back to us, we're not necessarily going to spoon feed this individual.
No.
But if they're at risk of losing that benefit, I would up the urgency.
Like you mentioned earlier, though, if you're paying for it yourself as a company, the people not bother with deadlines, it's just like, we'll get it done. And
again, it's kind of up to the employee then, because if it means that they've lost out, are we under an obligation to backdate because they haven't got back to us? Unless their disability has meant that they've been unable to do something within the time frame, probably not. So we've made the offer, it's there, we've made it accessible, we've done some reasonable chasing. If they then just don't come back to us without a good reason, then probably not. But what I would say is, remember, these people are off on long-term sick, potentially have a serious debilitating injury. We need to have some empathy and have some patience. So just because they're not turning stuff around in a working day or how quickly we'd expect them to do it at work, we've got to get out of that mindset and remember these are individuals that we're dealing with and have some patience and empathy.
Remember, they are humans.
They are human beings.
Heroes putting the human in human resources.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tagline. I'm sure I've said that at some point. I feel like you've stolen that.
I reckon you have. That's definitely not me.
No.
100% that is not me. Last one on this. What do you do when the employee doesn't complete this form or process on time?
So, I mean, you could leave something open-ended and say, look, as and when you get back to us, we'll process this, but it might mean in the meantime that you're not getting access to things that could help you. If it's something that's mandated by something like an insurance company, it could well mean closing that off.
Okay. If it's for their benefit, but like you say, they might not understand it, but if it's for their benefit, it's in their best interest to get that done.
Yeah.
Innit? First Reddit post concluded, what did you make of that Reddit post, just out of curiosity?
I feel like it was a good question, and I feel like it's something that is probably going to resonate with quite a few employers.
Mm-hmm.
and particularly the points around accessibility. I mean, I like to think I'm a reasonably intelligent person, that I can generally understand information when it's given to me. But when somebody emails me with lots and lots of documentation, it's an area I'm not familiar with, so typically insurance. So I'm dealing with from a husband who treats his cars like they're banger vehicles, even when they're new. you know, every panel, front and back, wheel arches, whatever, there's going to be damage everywhere. Yeah. I'll get stuff from the insurance company and I will literally, I'll ring them, I'll be like, right, I need you to explain this to me like I'm stupid because what you've sent to me makes no sense. And they'll be talking about this policy under this initiative and this under this product. And because we've got this in this bundle, we get this. And I'm like, I literally have no idea what you'll say. It's just words on a page. It makes no sense to me. Please explain it to me like I'm stupid. And even then, they sometimes struggle to explain their own products in a language that people can understand. So I would say the takeaway is don't talk to people like they're stupid. That's patronizing. Mm-hmm. But make sure that, you know, a reasonable member of the public can understand without actually having to understand your sector or industry specific language can understand what it is that you're offering and what you're asking of them.
Absolutely. Are you ready for the next one?
I'm ready.
The second Reddit story.
Number two.
This one's about onboarding. Hey, I'm in HR at a mid-sized company and lately I've been feeling like our onboarding process is all over the place. Our current process just involves back and forth emails, welcome calls, and a checklist which is specific for every department. Obviously, developers and accountants need completely different checklists. New hires don't know what their first week will really look like and end up pinging us constantly with questions like, who do I talk to about X or where's the login for Y? I'm also doing a ton on my end, coordinating with IT, managers, setting up calendars, trying to give each person a good experience, but it's exhausting and takes a lot of time and energy. Again, before we go into questions on this, thoughts?
I mean, I did ask Dawn a moment ago, mm-hmm. Is this one made up or did it really come from Reddit or is this just an opportunity to plug our system? She has assured me it's a real one. In which case, Dawn, I very much hope that you put an answer in the comments to say, well, Heroes can do all of this for you. So this is a really, really common issue from an employee perspective. Employees feeling like they're kind of bounced from pillar to post and don't know what they're doing and they're just kind of floating around during that onboarding process. Mm-hmm. But also from HR, where they get overloaded with admin and problems during this stage, where every department will make this a HR problem. So because equipment maybe hasn't been ordered, they will bounce it back to being a HR problem rather than someone not providing the equipment. And it's also where businesses where there's poor communication and connect between departments really, really fall down. Mm-hmm. So they don't know that there's someone new in the building. They don't know there's someone new in a role. And it all just feels very, very messy and all over the place.
Clunky. Yeah.
Now, I am very conscious that whilst I'm going to wax lyrical about best practice, for assuming the order that these get released in, Michelle is still in the room with us. So I'm hoping she's not going to be sitting here rolling her eyes at the onboarding process that I took her through. But I'll talk about best practice anyway, as if it's something that I do every single time. For me, it's all about front-loading the knowledge that somebody knows what the first couple of weeks is going to look like mm-hmm. and what the roadmap is for further down the line. So this is what's going to happen on your first day. These are the people that you're going to meet. These are the tasks that you're going to be doing. And this is what we need from you before day one. And mapping out what every day of that 2-week process is going to look like. Now, we didn't stick to that with Michelle when she onboarded, purely because of, this is going to sound like I'm making excuses. I'm not. She very, very quickly was able to get just down to the job. We didn't need to go through the 2-week kind of, I'm not going to say laborious process, but the very, very kind of easy start to be able to get to know the business. And also we had some big jobs that came in that Michelle showed very, very quickly. She had the capability just to get her teeth into and crack on with. So setting out what the first couple of weeks are going to look like, who you're going to meet, book those meetings in the diary. So you might remember you had a meeting in the diary with Michelle, as did Jim, as did Dawn, as did Michael, to make sure that everybody, one, was aware Michelle had started, but also what you all did. So knowing who does what within the business, which I think is really, really important.
Absolutely.
Now, with larger businesses, it's not unusual to have people who are in their probation to spend half a day in a number of departments. So again, getting to know the people in those departments, understanding the names behind the email addresses and specifically what those departments do. So a couple of my clients actually do this. New starters have to spend time with every department. I remember I went away for a weekend and there was a very nice hotel that I stayed in Scotland. Junior people who join that hotel are expected to spend a week in every different department within the hotel to make sure they understand the challenges that are faced by the kitchens, by the people who do the laundry, by management, so that it gives a level of empathy to everybody within the business of what everybody else does. So we're kind of growing that culture with people who are starting.
Mm-hmm.
Documentation. So it goes without saying, we do the right to work check. Contracts go out before somebody starts. That needs to go out before someone starts
on
their
building.
First day.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That is a prerequisite that is going out at that point. Another pet hate of mine is on for the first week, you forget you've got a new starter and go, oh, we've got nothing for them to do because we haven't lined up the work yet. Here's the handbook, go and read it for a day.
Oh, mate, painful.
Nothing screams like, I haven't planned this onboarding. Like, here's the handbook and go and read it. So one, making people aware of where it is, saying, if you would like to read it, front to back, feel free.
Who's doing
However,
that?
Lots of people, lots of people will do this as an onboarding activity. I would prefer to replace that with, here is some mandatory training. So here is your sexual harassment training. Here is your anti-discrimination training. Here is your GDPR training. Let's get those done in the first week. We provide all of those
in
a nicely packaged e-learning environment.
We do.
So making sure that we are giving people the tools to be able to do their job not only well, but confidently. So they feel like they are part of the furniture as quickly as possible. And we do that through that supportive onboarding process. So what I do when we have a new starter is their plan goes out to them before they start. So this is my plan for you for your onboarding process and what's going to happen in the first week and then months of your employment. And this is what I hope that we're going to achieve. So they've got visibility of that before they come in. And then also some information about the business. They will have been Googling, they will have been on LinkedIn having a look. But this is what we say about ourselves. These are key people within the business. These are our stakeholders. These are our investors. These are people who make the decisions. This is where our office is. This is where you can get your lunch when you come in on your first day. Because there's nothing worse, and this has happened to me before, is you turn up at a business park and then realize there is nowhere to buy lunch.
I'll
and this was in
idea.
The days before Deliveroo and Uber Eats. So I went the entire day without having anything to eat because there was one, I couldn't park the car near the office and it was like a 15-minute walk to get there, having paid 20 quid for the car park for the day. But then there was nowhere to be able to get my lunch. Mm. I could have done with knowing that before I started.
It's pretty useful information.
Exactly.
Ain't
so
it?
The
yeah.
things, if you think, if I was walking into this building for the first time,
what would I want?
What do I need to know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think we touched on this on another pod. The experience I had in a law firm where I was told to empty my tea out, wash the mug out and give it back to the partner that it belonged to.
Remember to tell me about
because
that.
Because I didn't bring my own mug. I didn't know.
How would you know?
No.
You're not expected to.
So
really.
One, we're not going to be replicating those practices.
No.
But think, what do we need this person to know so that they can settle in properly? And that is the environment that we have built our onboarding process around, is to enable contracts and right to work documentation to go out nice and early, that we can schedule tasks through that onboarding, that we can customize those tasks so that when we click we've got a new starter, those tasks are produced on a consistent basis so that we're not having to think, what's the process again? It's all there in the system.
To relevant departments at the relevant times.
Mm-hmm. Ordering equipment again, the other one. People who sit there waiting for a laptop.
You speak to IT?
Yeah.
Well, obviously I'm going to speak to IT because
yeah.
you're not sorting it. Full disclosure, my laptop's died, but I've memorised the questions. It's
overheated. Do you want my iPad?
No, mate. It's all
Are
right.
you sure?
I've memorised the questions.
Okay.
I think the first one was, how do you currently handle your onboarding? Which we've kind of spoken
yeah,
about.
So
that,
we talked
we?
About that.
So,
yeah.
But the second one was systems and workflows in place, which we've also kind of spoken about.
Yeah. So the reason why we make ours, and this is going to sound like a massive plug, it's not. The reason why we made ours so that it is customizable is because what works for one business isn't going to work for another. I can see you feel like a spare part now. Don't
I don't
you?
Know
you
what I'm
your
doing, mate.
You don't know what you're doing.
I ain't got a screen in front of me. I'm panicking.
Just take the iPad.
Really?
Yeah. That's fine. There you go.
I'll do the last one then because I've got this now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Payroll, deceased employee. Any payroll professionals have any experience with paying out wages of a deceased employee to their spouse? I mean, you're not a payroll professional, but I imagine you have experience.
I have come across this. So up to the point where a person dies, their payroll, the pay that they should have had forms part of their estate. So say you get to the day before payroll and an employee passes away. You don't go, yes, saving on the payroll this month. Like what they have earned whilst they've been alive is forms part of their estate. So that would typically be paid into their bank account.
Okay.
The other question I get asked here is around notice. So...
Well, someone's died.
Well, someone died. Would we pay the notice out into the estate? They didn't give us any notice that they were passing away. It sounds stupid when you say it out loud, but it's actually a question I get asked is what happens to the notice period?
It's valid.
Which is a valid question. Yeah. Now, if someone passes away, they are no longer capable of performing their contract of employment. So rather than breaching their contract of employment or it being an SOSR decision, we're not saucering people for dying on the job.
I like that one.
The contract of employment has been frustrated, which means it is impossible now for it to be performed because it requires two people, the employer and the employee, to do so. So typically, the obligations under the contract fall away. But we would be paying accrued holiday, any pension entitlements, as we would do up to the point where they have passed away, get paid in. Now, if we had someone ring to say you can't pay into that bank account because the estate has been frozen, or, you know, so this could be where someone perhaps has died in mysterious circumstances, or perhaps there's a question over the estate. Now, I'm not a contentious probate lawyer. However, I do know an excellent one because she works in my office at home. So if anybody needs a contentious probate lawyer, Laura Alice is the girl for you. She's fantastic. And actually, this is her bag when it comes to, well, what happens now where we've got a contested estate and someone's owed money from an employer? She'd be like, on it with this.
She knows.
So I'm going to go based off the eavesdropping I do when we're in the office together. If someone's bank account's frozen and we physically can't pay into it anymore, that money then doesn't just belong to the employer. It still belongs to somebody, whether it's going to be HMRC, whether it's going to be a spouse, whether it's going to be children, you know, whatever the will either says, or if someone's died intestate, where the intestacy rules say that money goes. So my advice to the employer in that circumstances is you want to ring fence that money. You put it somewhere safe where it's not going to be used by the business, and you inform the executors, we have this person's pay. This is how much money we have and how we've compiled it. But for whatever reason, it can be no longer paid into the nominated bank account. We're making you aware it is here. And then at that point, I would, if someone then says, okay, pay it to me, I would be taking legal advice. Because yes, it's going to have to go somewhere, but it could be, say, one of the children rings you and says, I'm inheriting under the will, send the money to me. But the executor is responsible for that estate. So if an executor rings and says, well, look, we need it to be transferred into here, we're going to need some documentation around that to say, well, look, can you, one, provide me with some documentation that shows you're the executor. Mm-hmm. And I would also, again, just to be sure, it's a small point, it's not going to cost you a lot of money. Let's just take a bit of advice to make sure that we are complying with our obligations around what we should and what we shouldn't be doing. Businesses are not expected to be estate experts. Neither are employment lawyers or your HR. So if you're in a situation where you think, I've got a request to pay this somewhere and I just don't know, always take advice on it.
It sounds real complex. Mm-hmm. If it's complex for you in law terms, it must be.
I tend to find with lawyers. So I remember when I was doing work experience, just like 10 minutes ago.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
You meant
it as a joke?
Did I?
With you?
No, when I did work experience and was working in a post room because email wasn't being used.
Oh, wow.
Generally then, particularly in high streets, lawyers were just lawyers of the law. Specialties were a little bit more unusual. And lawyers were expected to have quite broad knowledge about lots of different areas. Mm-hmm. These days, that's more rare. And it is considered to be more risk of negligence if you try and know a little about a lot, because the risk is that you'll advise on the little bit you know and then make some assumptions which are wrong. If your advice is negligent, then you could end up getting struck off. You can get in trouble with the SRA. So specialties have formed, and it means that people get higher quality advice. It means the people who are advising them really, really, really know their stuff. But then it also means when you're kind of in the pub and someone goes, you're a lawyer. My uncle's been banged up for murder, but he didn't do it. What does he do? And I go, I haven't got a clue. Ring his lawyer, ring his actuary. And they go, but you're a lawyer. You know the law. No, I don't. No. I know loads about employment law. I know very little about other areas of the law, particularly conveyancing. Please never anybody ask me anything about buying and selling houses because...
Not your bag.
I'm not a professional form filler. Sorry, conveyancers. We love you all. Really, really, we do. But yeah, it's one of those where even lawyers in particular as will be out of their depth. It's where the specialties really come in.
I don't know if you're aware, there was recent Liverpool footballer died, Diogo Jota.
Yeah, really, really, really sad situation.
Very sad. 2 weeks after his wedding, it looked like the other things. He'd obviously won the Nations League, the Premier League this year. But Liverpool have paid the, will pay the his contract, the 3 years to his family.
So I've seen this as being fact-checked because apparently this has been going around the news outlets and social media.
Is a lie?
I don't know if it's a lie or whether just people have said this is what they're going to do, but I don't think it's at this point, the point where we're talking about this, I don't think it's been confirmed by the football club yet.
Oh.
So I think it's become the social media truth. Is everyone saying, oh, it's amazing, it's being done. It may well, they may well be doing that. This is on my list to fact check because I was going to do a post about this. That and another one that I need to fact check. Is I don't know whether this is a social media truth or whether it is a fact, but ultimately I think with the footballers' contract, one, the footballers are insured.
Right.
They are assets for the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them is typically insured. Because if you have your star striker who mid-season passes away, and that's going to impact the club's ability to do well, that is an insured asset,
mm-hmm.
as brutal as that sounds.
Makes sense,
so he will have been insured. So in this situation where Liverpool, if they are offering to pay that to the family, I suspect it's an insured loss. They're not going to be financially too badly off the club.
Oh, so they're not technically paying for it.
If they are. So they're under no contractual obligation, I don't believe. There may well be, particularly with the big players who are very, very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I may well, when this goes out, I might tag someone that I used to know from my early lawyer days who's now an employment sports lawyer.
Okay.
So
many niches, isn't there?
Might be a good guest, maybe. I'll have a chat with him because I think that could be a good one.
Oh,
anyway,
that.
Whether the ones at the really, really high level, whether they are able to negotiate these terms into their contract, say if something happens to me mid-season, you look after my family.
Mm.
You know, they sacrifice a lot of their lives during the football season. They're very, very unavailable. They have to travel around the world. You know, the families generally, okay, they're very well compensated, but they go through quite a lot during the period when footballers are active. They don't
work-life balance. Yeah, it's not really
there isn't a huge amount of it, is the impression that I get.
No.
Is that when they're at that very high level and they are able to command enormous signing figures, that part, whether those contracts then include things around families. If they didn't before, I suspect this situation may well prompt that. I could be talking absolute rubbish. Like I say, we'll see if I can reach out to this guy who I'm pretty sure is an employment sports lawyer now, around that. But if it's not contractual, Liverpool have got no obligation to do it. From a PR perspective, it's slick. Looks really good.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it?
Slick.
And ultimately, and like, when you look at the two sides of it, it's incredibly tragic. They only got married, 11 days before, and the children were very young.
Three kids.
By all accounts, as a footballer, apparently, he had financial smarts.
Mm.
He's amassed quite some wealth. His family's not going to be struggling. So then there was questions about what Liverpool could do with that money rather than compensating a family of multimillionaires who will have life insurance as well, whether there is some good within the Liverpool area they could do with that money.
It's arguably what he might have wanted as well. He was from what I've read, he was quite a well-liked figure, quite a humble bloke.
So it's an amazing gesture. It's not one necessarily that they have to do if they're not contractually bound by it, but also whether that is, from a philanthropic perspective, the right move.
That's a huge word.
It is a big word.
I'm going to hand you this back because I'm holding it like I've nicked it. That is it for Reddit today. What are your thoughts on the Reddit community first? Because
I think it's given us some good talking points.
I've been saying this for the longest and you've been like, no. You haven't been like, no, I'm just trying to dig you out.
Okay, I was going to say, I'm not sure we've ever really discussed Reddit.
No.
And I think, you know, things like, you know, death at work is one of the topics that I really do want to cover in a future pod. We're looking at potentially getting an expert around that, potentially a barrister, to come in and have a chat with us about death at work and those situations and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's two sides to the death at work stuff. You know, we've got when someone actually dies on our premises, mm-hmm. either because of a work-related accident or because they pass away because of health, and what the implications are for employers. And then it's one of the questions I think we didn't really get to on here, which is about, you know, at that point then when we're dealing with the bereaved family members, how we manage that from an employment situation where we've got people perhaps ringing up saying, you know, we're short of money, I need his pay now. I can't wait till payroll. And we've got to think about, well, actually this now forms part of the estate and making sure we're doing those things properly. So it touches on what I've already said around taking advice. But yeah, I think something where we talk in conjunction with a specialist around, you know, the death at work stuff, I think it'll make a good session.
No, I agree. Top discussion. Yeah, that's all I've got time for today. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, A big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER at heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.